think we've had a good example from our songs today about what the sermon was supposed to be about. And that is, how should we be in this world? Look at the pain and the hope that we sang about from the choir. Look at the plea for some sense that we appreciate our world, this beautiful, complicated, painful, wonderful world. When I was young and knew far more than I know now and was far more certain about all of the things that I knew than I am now, I looked at religion and was terribly disappointed in the stories and in the fairy tales and in the mythology, and I was of a good, rational, scientific bent. And then I studied science and I studied philosophy, and you know, I found some common themes going through both of them, or through all of these subjects. When I was looking at religion, at first, as a child, back in the 50s and the 60s, most religions were saying, religion is about this relationship that you have between God and your heart. Yeah, there are some moral issues that we talk about, but shh, don't let it become politics, because politics and religion can have nothing in common, or you'll lose that nice deduction that Al talked to you about. And many people said, you know, religion is just the songs that you sing in church. Leave your religion in your sanctuaries on Fridays or Saturdays or Sundays, because it's ceremonial. It's not really for something out there. When I was studying philosophy, the linguistic analyzers were saying, you know, philosophy is about talk. It's about how we talk about talk. It's about how we think about thought. It's about all of these abstractions that lead to logic, but it must have nothing to do with the world. If you try to connect philosophy to the world, you're just a sentimental lotus eater. Real philosophy is rigorous and rational and has no business showing up in your life. This I found deeply disturbing, because it seems to me that what most decent human beings are searching for in all faiths and in all ways, whether by reason or inspiration, by intuition or logical proof, is some way of connecting our hearts to our hands, our souls to our bodies, the things that we believe and our philosophies to our actions. And not simply to be told from either a pulpit or a political platform what it is that you should do without thought, but how can we, applying reason with passion and poetry, engage this beautiful, tough, fragile, painful, inspirational, heartbreaking world and life? I have sought and still am seeking, so don't get excited, you're not getting the answer today, the unified field theory that brings together our passions and our reason, that brings together our values and our religion and how we are to be in the world, how we can bridge the great distances that we have created in philosophy and that we see in geography. Recently, I've been reading a lot of science. Well, a lot of science and physics for dummies, because I don't really have the background to be wrestling with this stuff on the professional level. So I've been reading Bill Bryson's The History of Almost Everything, and I've been reading Brian Greene's Fabric of Creation. And what I'm finding is that there is a great sense of unity, and the deeper that we go into either science or philosophy, the more that they have in common. Einstein set the speed limit for the universe, or observed the speed limit for the universe, at the speed of light. Religion and science have found a common roadblock in the beginning of time. As we look at scriptures, as we look at science, we can't get back before that let there be light, big bang moment. And the great philosophical, religious, scientific question is still, why are we here? How is it that we got here? Where is it that we are going? Why is there something when there could just as easily perhaps be nothing? Of course, if there were nothing, we wouldn't be asking the questions we think. So therefore, we think, and I am, and you are. All right, I know I'm putting the horse before the cart here, but let me explain what I mean. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. But that's incomplete. I think, therefore you are. I have language because language is a conventional gift that implies others. I'm not a solipsist. I'm not alone in the universe. Even in that little I think, therefore I am, there is a door that leads me to you, that leads outside the lonely cell of self, however we imagine that, and connects us to each other, connects us in ways of finding out who we are, teaches us how to think, how to write poetry, how to feel poetry, how to stand up in this creation and just gaze with wonder and with awe at the life that we have before us. And we must know, because of the connections of language, that we are not alone. We did not wholly create ourselves, that we are not simply gazing into a mirror, but the mirror that we gaze into is a reflection from the eyes of others. And who we are is partially how we see each other seeing us. It's a simple and really a self-evident relationship. We wonder, what is our connection to the rest of humanity? Am I my brother's keeper? What difference does it make if they are starving to death in Ethiopia, if they are oppressed in Tibet? What does it mean to me that in Somalia they started killing the black Christians and then they moved to kill their black co-religionist Muslims? What does it mean to us? It's far away. I don't think it's far away. I don't think, and the more that I'm reading science, and the more that I see that roadblock of space and time, and hear that about what we Unitarian Universalists call the interconnected web of all being, that we are in fact connected. I'm not religious in the normal orthodox way of any particular religion. That is, I don't see that there's only one set of symbols or stories or myths that will forever explain our connection to the source of life and meaning. I think it's an evolving process for all of us that we look at science, at scriptures, and we try to relate and see where we are at a moment. That there are extremists in the world of religion who would take from religion anything that is political except their own point of view and tell you what it means and tell you what to believe and how to understand it. And there are rationalists who would take from science the poetry and the wonder. But I think those are two errors. I think that poetry and wonder and science and religion all go together in the great sense of wow, in the great sense of there is something here that, as one great physicist said, the question is not, is our explanation weird? The question is our explanation weird enough? Think about what it is that good, rational, scientific people believe about our world and the and life and the universe. I'm going to say a we. We believe that there are atoms underneath this and this. We believe that these solid appearances are just a question of magnification, a question of appearances. We believe that underneath all of that, we are quivering with the same energy. You and I and the earth and the sea and the stars, and that there are no holes in creation. And at the very same time, not letting contradictions bother us any more than Alice before breakfast, not any particular Alice, just Alice in Wonderland or Through the Looking Glass Alice, we also believe that you and I are real and that we have within us inherent dignity and worth, and that we have to each other a sense of contingent responsibility because we know each other, we know ourselves from how we are treated. Treat me as I'm stupid and can't carry a tune, and I will learn that I'm stupid and I can't carry a tune. Treat me as someone worthless, and I promise to be someone worthless. Treat my life as if it's something that can be thrown away or taken without any process or reason, and how can I feel in a place where I can give to you life and dignity and respect? We are tied together in space-time. We are tied together in ways that are too weird for us to understand. In quantum mechanics, there is at the moment a measurable reason to believe that two things that are not connected at all have a sense of simultaneity, that they will turn with no means of communication at exactly the same time. Seems to break Einstein's speed limit, and God knows how bad the fine is for breaking the ultimate speed limit. It's got to be pretty serious. Well, officer, I thought I was only going 185,500 miles per second, but I guess I was wrong. How does it do it? We don't know. We don't have a clue. It is as if a supernova from a star a million light years away went off, and at the very same moment we turned on a light switch and we saw those lights at the same time. But they're a million light years apart, but they come to us in the same apparent moment. But what if, as quantum mechanics seems to posit, that nova could go off and turn on our light switch at the very same moment, skipping the 100 million light years? Would that be breaking a speed limit, or is space and time warped in such a way that we have not begun to wrap our minds around? I don't know. I don't know. But these are the directions that are so weird that they make all of those theological questions with which I wrestled in college seem like easy stuff. What was the sound of God's voice if there was a vacuum before creation? Interesting stuff, but not nearly as weird a question as what quantum mechanics poses that we at least take seriously. There are indeed more things in heaven and earth than dreamt of in all of our philosophies. And we cannot begin to imagine them, but we can appreciate them. Ludwig Wittgenstein, the great philosopher, one of the great philosophers of the 20th century, said, "It is not how the world is that is mysterious, it is that it is." How the world is the job of science. We must never cease from exploring and trying to find out why things happen. But that the world is deeply mysterious and wonderful. We are here for a few moments. We live and we are separate and we are one. Our fate is not that different from the people in Darfur, and we can't close our eyes and turn away and make their pain stop just in us because we believe in a solipsistic universe. If I don't see it, it's not happening. It is happening, and it is happening closer and closer with every year as our world becomes smaller. We cannot live upriver and drop pollutants into that river, secure that it will only affect those people downriver, because we also live downriver. There's only one river. There's only one ocean. There's only one rain. There's only one creation, and we share it from the farthest star to the vein on our neck. And we are connected one to another. Scientists tell us that gravity is put out there, an attraction between everything in the universe. And while its power fades as an inverse square to distance, it is still there. We affect one another. We are part of the same life, the same majesty of creation, the same ineffable miracle that makes us stand before creation when we are paying attention and just go, wow. But after having said wow, then what? How do we connect this spirit to heart to hands? Logicians understood in Aristotle's time that two things that had nothing in common could have no effect on each other. It was one of the great philosophical, theological problems of creation. That's why if people understood man as material and God as totally other, they could have no effect on each other. Two things with nothing in common, sometimes we marry that, two things with nothing in common have no effect on each other. And that's why there are seven heavens. That's why there are various emanations and mystical systems to try to connect them. But it doesn't work logically, because you can't put a ladder between two things that have no connection, no matter how many rungs you put in. They still have no connection, except we know that's not true. The limits of logic. We can talk about body and spirit. We can be present at the miracle of birth. We can be present at that miracle of death, when what some would call a soul or a life force, an animating energy, leaves the body, and we recognize these are two different states, and we don't know beyond the numbers and chemical signs what life is and what the connection is between the self and the body. We don't know the nature of the connections that we have in time and space and in our hearts, but we know that body and soul are for a time connected. And we know that we as a human community are connected. And we know that everything on this Earth, at least, is connected with an effect on everything else. So what we do what we choose not to do, whom we help, and how we live makes a tremendous, powerful, and in this age and for this group, a uniquely powerful impact on everything else on this planet. We can shrink in horror from the pain. We can try to stay away from our responsibilities one to another. We can run, but we can't outrace light. And we can't outrace the force of gravity that turns space into itself and moves us together as one humanity with choices. Be enriched by our differences, be frightened by our differences. Enjoy this marvelous particularization of energy that we call life before fading into the greater energy of the universe, or just try to close our eyes to all of the joys and all of the pain. And that is no answer. We have a few moments. Let's use them to fill our eyes with wonder and our hearts with hope. Let's use it to believe in the sunlight when we can't see it, and to do love even when we don't feel it, and to allow others to touch and to open our hearts so that we do feel again the energy that lets us reach out to each other with love and with hope.